It's open air on the Rhythm and News service of Jefferson Public Radio, also streaming online at ijpr.org. I'm Eric Thiel. We've got another great live session in store for you today. Joining me in the JPR studios is guitarist Kaki King. Kaki, welcome to Jefferson Public Radio.
Hi, good to be here.
You've got a new album out called Glow. We will talk in depth about that in just a few minutes. I want to start by asking you quickly, where does Kaki come from?
Catherine. Yeah.
Was it a family nickname? Or?
No, when I was a baby, my parents named me Catherine Elizabeth King, and I didn't come out very big. So they gave me this big name, and I didn't grow. And there was clearly I wasn't going to grow into it. So they had to shorten it, and so Kaki was my nickname since I was a baby.
And you're originally from where?
Atlanta,
but not now, right?
No, now I live in Brooklyn.
How did you get started playing music?
I was four, and I had no choice because I was four, and my parents put a classical guitar in my hands and gave me lessons.
There's a picture of you, right, in one of your early albums
of my first album.
The guitar, right?
Yeah. And I mean, I know I was good at it, but I didn't really like it. I wasn't a fan. I didn't like having to do lessons and practice, and I just didn't get much out of it. But I knew how to do it. I knew how to play.
Was that because it was not something that you gravitated toward, but because it was put in your hands?
Because it's hard. Guitar is really hard. It's hard and it's difficult, and when you're really small, like me, it's even worse. So it was just a struggle, and but I think that most four-year-olds would agree if you take a poll.
Yeah. Now, you played guitar for a while, but then made a shift, right, to drums?
Yeah, well, you know, guitar became more and more something I did by myself, and drums and bass guitar as well, but a lot of drums was the thing that I did, like, with friends, and I played in bands, and that was my social life, and it was, everyone always needed a drummer or a bassist or someone whose mom would drive them around with a drum set in their car. And so I always played guitar. I never stopped. In fact, I probably picked it up more, but drums was just this public thing that I did.
And was it drum set?
Yeah, and I played in school percussion, and I was a band nerd, and you know, did all of it.
Yeah. Now, for folks that are not familiar with your sound, you definitely often approach the guitar in a slightly unusual way. When you started playing, were you playing more traditionally?
Sure, but you know, when I started playing, I was a kid, and I was playing one-note lines like "Mary Had a Little Lamb" and
scales and things, right?
Yeah, Frère Jacques and things, and I didn't really take lessons very far. But what I did do is I learned about fingerstyle guitar, and I learned about open tunings, and I knew this because my dad loved Windham Hill records. He loved those old Alex Agassi and Michael Hedges and Will Ackerman and all those guys that were playing acoustic guitars with tons of reverb,
and we've played
doing
all
that
of that here.
Yeah,
over the
sure,
years,
I'm sure, and it's great stuff, and it had it's like this serious cultural moment in the '80s. But I was a little kid then, and my dad had it on in the house, so I knew that guitar could do that. Like I knew those records, and I wasn't afraid of it when I started to experiment.
When you pick up the guitar now, which way feels normal? Which way feels natural?
Well, finger picking feels natural. The left hand over the top or underneath is almost irrelevant. It does not feel natural to hold a pick anymore. It did for a while, and it doesn't feel natural to me when I don't have these false nails on. And it's just because it's been so long that I've been doing it this way. So it's really more, I feel like 90%, well, I don't know, a lot of my technique is all about the right hand, and the left hand is sort of plays more of a supporting role.
It's Kaki King live in the studios of Jefferson Public Radio. The new album is called Glow. What are you going to play for us first?
I'm going to play a song called Cargo Cult.
Thank you. It's Khaki King live on open air here on the Rhythm and News Service of Jefferson Public Radio. You can also catch us online at ijpr.org. The tune is called Cargo Cult from the new album Glow. Khaki, over the course of what is now 6 albums, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
You have always gravitated toward really unusual song titles.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that?
Well, they're instrumental titles, so many of them. So they don't have like a lyric behind them. And, you know, I think maybe because, like we said before, I've listened to a lot of instrumental guitar in my life, and a lot of titles are, you know, like, you know, Orkney Island at Night, or, or, you know, Pacific Coast Highway, you know, June 16th. It's just very pastoral, and it's funny because I always loved the solo guitar genre, but I never dug that kind of, I never heard that naturalism. I always was more gritty and heard a city, and I heard darkness, and I heard, you know, it wasn't happy music for me, and it was moody. And so I guess I try to have titles that are a little more evocative of the mood of the piece, or at least spark some kind of idea, and not something that, you know, but if things were different, then it'd be different. If I was truly inspired by Mount Shasta at twilight, then I would say that, you know, I would not acknowledge that, but it just hasn't been the case with me.
And that could be on the next album, right? Mount Shasta?
Probably not.
So you started off talking about playing classical guitar as a young girl.
Mm-hmm.
At the point where you started experimenting with your approach to playing, was that inspired by hearing someone playing in that way with a more percussive approach? And do you remember what that was that you heard?
Well, it was revisiting as a young adult my dad's old records. And then it was Nick Drake. Mm-hmm. And it was Johnny Marr. And it was Mark Kozelek, Red House Painters, that was a huge, huge influence. Those were the things that were swirling around in my head. Those were the creative guitar players that I would reference. And so, of course, it was, you know, from early on, playing guitar or any instrument for me was, I'd hear something and I'd want to learn it. I'd want to go to play it, even if it was just top 40 radio and jamming along. That's how I learned, you know, how to play the basics of guitar. And then the more I heard, the more I thought, well, maybe, like, how did they do that? It was just figuring things out. And, you know, I remember listening to solo guitar albums and the first thing you got to figure out is the tuning people are in, and you have to hear the harmonics, because harmonics are a giveaway. So if you ever hear a harmonic, you can almost guarantee you can find the note that the string is tuned to. And so it was like deciphering something and learning how to, you know, even if I just learned to play the intro to a track, I was really excited about it.
Mm-hmm. And percussion has stayed with you, right? You continue to play percussion?
Yeah, absolutely.
It seems like it's such a visual approach to playing, you know, where you're sort of looking at the fretboard and sort mm-hmm. of attacking in different places with your fingers. Have you migrated to more melodic percussion instruments over time, like marimbas or xylophones or things like that, where you can see the notes?
Interesting. I mean, I haven't only because they're big and my apartment's really tiny. Believe me, if I had all the space and money in the world, I would definitely own a marimba. They're gorgeous and amazing. And throughout all of this time, Evelyn Glennie, who's a percussionist, has remained one of my biggest influences just as a musician. I mean, while I haven't specifically, I think it's just from lack of experience.
And you mentioned tunings mm-hmm. to hear those harmonics that are in there. You employ a number of tunings,
mm-hmm.
Even on one album like Glow, all over the place. What got you interested in starting to tune guitars in different ways?
The same kind of stuff. You know, I had played in standard tuning for quite a while, and these other records that I was really into. They weren't in standard tuning. It's very modal. It has more of a melancholy sound. So it just allows a song to almost write itself occasionally. If you really get into a cool tuning, it's like just there's something is just going to come out of it. And all kinds of reasons. I liked how it turns the guitar into something where you're really playing the guitar, and how, you know, suddenly all the construction of it really, really matters. The length of decay you get, you know, is a musical. It's the timing of it and the color of it. You know, just that alone can be very important, guitar to guitar, you know, on how you write a song. So, I don't know. I mean, it's a different creative thing. I didn't have to kind of learn by rote all of the traditional chords, I suppose, you know, which I know all of them, but I have to, it takes me about 10 minutes to work each one of them out on standard tuning. Yeah. I just never was good at it. Maybe that's an honest answer to the question. I was never really good at playing normal guitar. I just wasn't, you know, I never sort of excelled. But when I found this, something changed and took off.
Yeah. Well, that kind of stuff, tuning in a lot of different ways on an album works great because you've got time in the studio to set it up.
Mm-hmm.
In live performance, though, how do you manage all of it? Is it just an excuse to buy more guitars?
Oh, well, clearly, because, yeah. I have a guitar tech. She's actually right here in the studio.
Hello.
And her name's Anna Morsett.
Hello.
And she's a complete genius. And she, I you know, it came to a point where I really wasn't able to do the shows without Anna. If I'd had to do it, it would be a different show. So I've been very lucky that I've had someone that's a total genius and a guitar repair person as well to take care of this stuff, as well as many, many other important things in my life. She's an incredible friend. But yeah, it has gotten to that point. It's really gotten to the point where more than three guitars and it just things get out of control. And there are so many tunings.
What's your collection like and what's your regular arsenal like?
Well, the regular arsenal right now, I have a couple Ovations that are my signature. And
we'll talk about that.
Anyway, I have a couple Ovations, and I have this tiny 12 string, which I'll play. It's called a Griffin. And then I have a 7 string nylon string guitar, which I need to play it a bit more live because it sounds unbelievable. And then I have a Koto guitar that is on the record on Bowen Island.
On Bowen Island, right.
And then there's that's what I have now. You know, in my collection, I got a lot of stuff, and it's
small apartment, many guitars.
Well, yeah, yeah, basically.
Now, are you going to play the 12 string next?
Yeah, sure.
All right, so we're going to take a quick break and be back with more live music. Khaki King is my guest, live in the studios of Jefferson Public Radio. It's Khaki King, live in the studios of Jefferson Public Radio, here on the Rhythm and News Service of JPR. You can also catch us online at ijpr.org. The new album is Glow. What are you going to play for us next?
I'm going to play a song called Fences.
Thank you.
It's Khaki King live on open air here on the Rhythm and News Service of Jefferson Public Radio. A tune called Fences, that is from the new album called Glow. Well, let's talk about the new album a little bit. After a few, two, three solo guitar albums, you started singing a bit on a couple of recordings. Then a band record that was a little louder and more raucous, and this one finds you doing yet something different entirely. What was the genesis of the songs that ended up on Glow?
I wanted to do a guitar record, and that's really all I knew, honestly. I knew it was almost like guitar plus is what I kept thinking.
It kind of sounds like a guitars album, though, because there's such a different sound from song to song.
Well, that's true. I mean, that certainly is true. There are many different guitars. But fundamental to each song is that it was written and completely translates live as just one person playing a guitar. Now
I was going to ask you about that because there's so many arrangements on the mm-hmm. album, strings and overdubbing and all sorts mm-hmm. of things. I didn't know how well some of those songs would translate of just you, and I wondered if all of them started as just a solo guitar piece.
Exactly. They all started as solo guitar pieces, the exception being the ones with the string quartet. And so, I made the record Dreaming of Revenge, and I just said, okay, well, I've got all these demos, and what do we do? And but they're all solo guitar tunes. And the way that record was made was things were layered on top and layered on top till it became this like really cool musical soup, and it all mixed in and sounded great together, but at the expense of these original solo guitar recordings, which was totally fine. It's a great record. But this time, all the instruments, everything else that you hear really plays a supporting role, that when taken away, you're still left with these cool solo guitar tracks. And I feel like that was important for me to do because it means that you hear this song, you get to hear the song twice. The recorded version is this really wonderfully, beautifully produced, to my ear, very interesting ear candy. And live, it's simply the sound of one person playing a guitar.
Hmm. And on the album, with the exception of a couple of tracks where there's a string quartet and a little help on a few tracks, you play most of the sounds,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
How long did that process take of laying all of that down?
It took unbelievably short amount of time.
Really?
Yeah. I had an amazing producer named D. James Goodwin, and I don't quite know how it happened, but he and I just managed to become two people sharing one brain for less than 2 weeks to track the whole thing. I think that I probably gave him a call sometime around early May, and the record was mastered and completely done by mid-June. And that is a lot had to happen in between that time. I think we probably started tracking in late May, and then by June 15th it was done.
What part did you play in those string arrangements?
I met with Ralph Ferris, who's the creative director of the string quartet Ethel, and he's a violist, and he came over to my house, and I played him the two tunes that I'd been thinking about, and he played back to me, and he played with me, and we
really?
Just jammed. Yeah, it was just jamming. And he said, what about this? And I said, I like that, but I think maybe if we did it this way, and what if there's a break here, and what if, you know, and it was really totally collaborative. And then he wrote these unbelievable arrangements, which then Ethel and I rehearsed. So it was really collaborative on every level, which I find a lot of times you get string arrangements on a song and you find an arranger and then they do something and then they send it off to some string players that then come to a studio. They've never played together. And this was like
and
playing.
You've never met them, right?
Yeah, I've never met them, and it's kind of awkward and they're really good and they're scary, and but you like want to tell them what to do, but you're frightened of them. And this was really just playing. It was like playing with a band. It was great.
One of the things that is almost always in photographs of you, certainly when you're performing, are these Ovation guitars.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that you were part of a process of creating a signature model, like the Khaki King Ovation
uh-huh.
model.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about that process. How did that come about?
I had been playing with playing Ovation for a long time and developed a relationship with the artist relations guy. And I think they said, do you want to do a signature model? And I'd probably commissioned a guitar that cosmetically looked a bit different, and it was bright blue. I think after that guitar was made, and I had made some other, you know, because I'm such a scary guitar player, they hold my guitars together with airplane glue, and not the small kind, the real airplanes. They said, you know, do you want to turn this into a line? And I said, absolutely. And hence, this guitar was born.
Tell me about it.
Well, you know, it's Ovation Adamus is their It has a carbon fiber top and a plastic back and a certain type of bracing underneath and a lot of guitar nerdery kind of things that I don't have to go into. I just kind of tidied up the stuff cosmetically that I thought needed to be done. I added a little crown at the 12th fret because for King. And I like the black and I like the sort of sleek look of it. I don't happen to think that guitars need a lot of flash. Well, actually, I think guitars are great and beautiful, but I get distracted by flash when I have it. I mean, I don't even like inlays. So there's no inlays on the fretboard, and except for this one. And I mean, that was it, you know, and we took some photos and it was in guitar magazines and now...
Now it's yours.
Now it's mine. But what's cool is that it's not like I put my name on a product and then they went and sold it. Like, I depend on these guitars. I would depend on these guitars if my name wasn't on them and if it had nothing, if I bought them off the street. They're amazing for what I do. I need them. It doesn't matter if other people buy them or not. It's really, these are my workhorses and they absolutely are amazing.
Kanky King is my guest live on open air here on Jefferson Public Radio. We're going to finish with one more tune. Mm-hmm. But is it true that you played for a period of time with Blue Man Group?
Yeah.
What was that like? And what part did you play in that performance art thing?
The New York production, which is still running, has a 3-man band, drums and electric zither and Chapman Stick. And I auditioned for Chapman Stick thinking that I would one day tell my grandchildren one time I had an audition for Blue Man Group. Like, it was really, you know, because I'd seen it and I thought, this is so great and so fun and the music's so crazy. And one, you know, I was the first audition of the day, which is the worst. And I got it. I got the job. And right. I was like 22 and just completely clueless. But I was playing Chapman Stick, which is an instrument that I had never really seen prior to that experience. And it was really fun, and I got to wear a costume and then be underneath this glow light, so I looked like this weird sort of tribal skeletal neon vision. And it was fun, and I really didn't take it very seriously, which is why if I hadn't quit, I probably would have been fired. But but by that time, I was, you know, making music for a living. So, but yeah, it was a great job and an opportunity for me to not have to work a 9-to-5 and make a tiny bit of money on the side and supplement the rest with music and. It helped me get my start. It was great.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. It's Kanky King live in the studios of Jefferson Public Radio. The new album is called Glow. What are you going to finish up with today?
This is a song called Kelvinator, Kelvinator. Thank you.
It's Khaki King live on open air here on the Rhythm and News Service of Jefferson Public Radio. The new album is called Glow. Khaki King, thanks so much for joining us here at JPR.
Thanks for having me.
And thanks to Anna. Guitar techs make the world go round, right?
They do. They absolutely do.
Open air continues right after this.